today I want to talk about how we can live to be 120 and healthy. It's an interesting topic. Imagine for a second that you could think for yourselves. If we all could think, we could take into consideration everything that we know, we could evaluate situations, and use our own best judgment. And we'd be in a situation where we wouldn't necessarily accept everybody else's myths and superstitions, agendas, ideas, and old wives' tales. We would actually think things through on our own. As a 6-year-old child, I had my first day of religious education in which a layperson told me that my best friends were going to hell because they weren't Catholic. When I went home, I was crying and my mother asked me why, and I explained, and she told me that I had just heard complete nonsense, complete untruth, and there was nothing true about that at all, and I could forget it. She went down to the church, raised hell with the priest, told him that anytime anybody ever told nonsense like that to any of her children, they would never see another Costello in church. 10 years later, my mother came home from work. She was a registered nurse with years and years of experience, and told me that a family friend had just been diagnosed during surgery as being filled with cancer and being terminal. They sewed him up, told him when he recovered he should go home, get his affairs in order, because he was going to die. I saw him about 30 days later. I said to him, "Mom, I saw Al, and he looks terrific." At which point she said, "We know so little about healing." So at 6, I knew people were basically full of crap when it comes to knowing God. And at 16, I realized we know so little about healing. Here we are, a whole bunch of years later, and the same situation is true. We know so little about God, and we know so little about healing. But I believe we can learn to control what we let into our minds and our bodies, and that will have an impact on our health. How we think, what we feel, how we speak, and how we act all impact us. And I believe we can let enough life, capital L, and you can call that life force, Christ, Spirit, God, anything you want, but we can let that power into our bodies so it can work for us, in us, and through us. Personal beliefs are really powerful things. People hold on to their beliefs about God and religion and politics, and frankly, human beings kill one another because of conflict in beliefs. Well, I'm not trying to upset you or to be too offensive. What I'd really like to do is to bring up some points that you will consider. You don't have to accept. Just consider them and see if they make sense to you. Give them your truth test. I have a bumper sticker in my office that says, "I believe in good." It's from the Humanist Organization. And I'm thinking everybody believes in good. Everybody. Everybody believes in good. The variable, though, is whether I believe in good for you, or you believe in good for me, or we believe in good for other people. There are a lot of people who believe in good for themselves and don't believe in good for anybody else, and they try to prevent the experience of good in those other people. Some people are so shamed by their experiences in life that they believe, well, other people have good and they deserve good, but not me. I think we all can believe in good, and we all can access good, and we can all have good. Lots of people that I talk to have strong beliefs about religion, have strong beliefs about God. Some people say God exists. Some people say, "I'm not sure." Some people say he does not exist. I'll say this. Maybe the God that we learned about, the man up on the cloud with a bad attitude waiting to judge and to punish us, I don't believe that being exists. I believe that life exists, intelligence exists, and energy exists. Now, look around and you would pretty much, yep, I agree with all three of those. I also believe that consciousness exists. I believe that we're basically in an ocean of consciousness, and we can shape it by the way we think, feel, speak, and act. Not long ago, my wife and I were landing in Miami Airport, and as I was leaving the plane, walking up the ramp, I saw this sign by a bank, a whole bunch of signs, by the way, from that bank, so they really know where their market is. It says, inheritance planning will begin at birth. No, it won't. No, it won't. Birth is a little late in the process. It starts way before that. Conception, in utero, and at birth, in the process. And then when the baby emerges, a lot of things are already set in motion to affect that child. I say inheritance begins way before birth. There was a study that's still ongoing. It's probably close to 15 years in duration so far, and it's been done by Kaiser Permanente, a major health maintenance organization in California. Adverse Childhood Experience Study, ACEstudy.org. They recognized through fortunate or not fortunate experience when three people who were succeeding tremendously in a weight loss program about 15 years ago and dropped out. And the doctor in charge went, that doesn't make any sense. These three people are doing astonishingly well. And when he had a conversation with the woman and the two men, he realized that as they lost weight, they were feeling very, very vulnerable. The woman was attracting attention, and it was scaring her. The men felt they were no longer larger than life, that they were penitentiary guards. And they needed to be big, at least in their estimation, in order to be safe with the people that they had to deal with on a daily basis. But the main points were, each one of these people had been sexually molested and abused as a small child. The woman had been, and these two men had been abused as boys. And from that point on, this doctor, along with Centers for Disease Control, started to investigate using the people who were members of the Kaiser Permanente HMO to see if there was a correlation between adverse childhood experiences and illnesses. And they found using an 8 or 9 question survey, and you get a point for a yes and no points for a no, simple to do, and people with high scores had a tendency to drug abuse, alcohol, out of wedlock pregnancy, diseases like multiple sclerosis, cancer, violence, and other things. And it's like, wow, if we're doing this to children at a very early age, we've got to do something about it. And then there's recognition by people who are involved in the prenatal and perinatal psychology organizations that what occurs in utero, the chemicals experienced by the mother, the emotions and stress experienced by the mother, all kinds of influences experienced by the mother directly impact that child. And I'll show you in a moment or two a whole list of illnesses that can be attributed to those in utero stressed experiences. It is even possible now that people can look at people who have committed suicide and make a prediction as to what kind of birth experiences they had. And as shocking as that sounds, people who use mechanical means to commit suicide, a gun or some other device like that, frequently had devices involved in the birth, like forceps. People who do drug overdoses in order to end their lives have oftentimes been exposed to drugs at birth, ether and other things, sedatives and so on, that their mother would have gotten and the baby, by extension, would have experienced. People who had trouble as babies breathing, the umbilical cord wrapped around the neck, that sort of thing, upon investigation, those suicides looked to be the ones that strangle themselves or suffocate themselves or drown themselves or suffocate themselves in a garage using the fumes of the car's exhaust. And it's like, wow, the seeds to those experiences were sown at birth. So no. Inheritance begins before birth. Some of the prenatal and perinatal, that's a newborn, stresses show up in the forms of a greater likelihood of leukemia, lymphoma, brain cancer, neuroblastoma, birth defects, miscarriage, ALS, lower IQs, anxiety, cerebral palsy, violence, autism, premature aging, multiple sclerosis, and other things. That is not a good thing. So, prenatal stresses and early childhood stresses interfere with a healthy life. What is it we're doing and why are we doing it? We're all living and we're all going to be dying. Sure, there's no really big deal with that, living and dying. That's part of the thing. It's scarier for people who believe that this is the one time they're ever going to live. Their consciousness has this one at-bat. They're going to be born, they're going to live, and they're going to die. They're going to be judged, and they're going to go to either heaven or hell. The thought of eternal damnation for one lifetime is terrifying to a lot of people. So that fear interferes with living. They're afraid of dying. Tibetan Buddhists would say, if you're afraid of dying, you're not really going to be able to live. So coming to terms with that, and I personally am a believer in a whole bunch of lives, like one iteration after another. We are perennials. We're not an annual creation. We're here multiple times, in my opinion. So we have to look at the purpose of life, and this could take, you know, hours and days and weeks and months of discussion to be able to narrow that down to decide that what is the purpose of life? Make it up. Is it to be happy? Is it to have experiences? We do want to have experiences because by having experiences, we grow. When people who travel around the world or go on cruises or go here or go there or try a new thing, they want to have an experience because it expands us. Because it's important that we grow. We're living, and living things grow. Things that don't grow are either not living in our sense, or they're dying. I happen to believe that the purpose of life is to grow spiritually, to grow in spiritual awareness. So now if you were to think of lives as kind of like school, you start in kindergarten, and then you go to first grade, and then second grade, and third grade. Is one of those, each one of those, like a life? Perhaps. That makes more sense to me than you get one life, do it right, eternal punishment, or eternal happiness. That sounds like marketing to me. Some people think the purpose of life is to be famous, to climb the top of some mountain that they've imagined, celebrity, money, political power, something of that sort. And others say, no, it's just about making money. That's the whole game. You come, you make money, then you die. Okay. In America, because of the obesity and the compulsiveness that we seem to be stuck in the throes of, I would say maybe turning food into bowel movements is the purpose of life for some people. It seems like that, stuffing themselves and having a bowel movement. I'm thinking there's got to be a higher aspiration than just that. I believe this to be true. All death is suicide. And some of it is assisted. The other day I read a terrible article or Facebook post about a 13-year-old girl who committed suicide as a result of being publicly shamed on the internet by her father. She committed suicide, and it was assisted by this insensitive behavior of her father. I think that's how it happens. sometimes people say, oh, that was a terrible tragedy. He died in an accident. And it turns out the details unfold and say, he was drunk. He was driving 90 miles an hour. He did it with his lights out, and it was at night. Was it a terrible tragedy, or was it suicide? Those lifestyle choices are what kill most people. In America, it's considered that 70% or even more of the deaths are because of lifestyle choices. So if you're making choices that result in your death, what do you call that? An accident? No, I don't. I call it suicide. And a bartender that serves a guy drinks beyond his capacity, he's an assist. He is assisting that guy in suicide. If I were to net this out, I believe this is to be what we are doing in life. We are filtering. We are filtering. Just imagine for a second that, and this is reality, so whether you can imagine it or not doesn't really matter, is this world, this universe, this solar system is electromagnetic in nature. Electromagnetic. The sun is electromagnetic. The moon is. The earth is electromagnetic. You are. I am. We're all. Everything that you see is electromagnetic in nature. So if you think about a magnet, you go, oh, yeah. I have two magnets, and boom, they stuck together. That's called bonding. And let me just turn one of them over, and I can't get them together. That's called rejection or repulsion. The magnets will not go together in that particular configuration. We filter. I'm looking through a glass, looking outside. It filters the wind out, it filters the rain out, but it doesn't filter light out. And then when I look further, I see a screen in my courtyard. It filters. It doesn't filter the air out, nor does it filter the rain out. But it does fill dust and filters dust. It filters bugs. It filters any kind of animal life other than geckos, who seem to have an affinity for going underneath the doorway. But everything is a filter when you think of it. We are filtering what we think about. You're filtering what I'm saying right now. So if we have the ability to filter certain things in and filter certain things out, and we bond with, that is, connect to or embrace or allow in and accept as our own certain things, and we reject other things, that's what we're doing. And if we can become skillful and aware in each of those three things, filtering, bonding, rejecting, so that we do it on such a level that we are not stressing our body, but in fact enabling our body to become all it's capable of being, because it's designed to heal. It's designed to heal and grow. So, why don't we grow to live to be 120 and healthy? Well, you know why? Because a lot of means are being used to kill us. We're being killed. And we're using these means to kill ourselves. So that's where the suicide comes in. We allow it, we embrace it, our lifestyle choices all lead us to this. But number one on the list of the means to kill us, I think, are our own ego drives. The first ego drive that expresses through the personality is our need to defend the self from criticism, emotional, and physical attack. Just think. I don't want you to criticize me. I don't want you to not like me. I don't want you to call me names. I don't want you to taunt me, tease me. And you go, wow, that's pretty universal in humanity. Of course it is. These ego drives are, on the one hand, essential to the protection of our individuality. We need an ego. It's what separates us from the chair or the floor or the things we're dealing with. I'm sitting in a chair. I'm different than my chair. I'm separate and distinct. I have individuated, and the chair is individuated from me. So it's like I'm not confused about which is me and which is the chair, and we are not one and the same. It's like, oh, yeah, got these individual identities that we march through life. And defending that is an absolute essential. When you damage somebody's ego, you're hurting them to the core. Now, some people, as you can understand, are so controlled by their egos that these drives are out of control. The ego is the master of the person, not the other way around, as it should be in ideal conditions. The second driving need is to finish first in the race of life, no matter what. And if you were to look at some of the public examples of people who do things in order to win, no matter what, and I'll just use one example of Lance Armstrong cheating in the Tour de France bicycle races that are world famous, and he won several of those, and he became really, really famous, and he denied repeatedly cheating. He denied it. And finally, he admitted it. He cheated in this most prestigious, most valuable, most important bicycle race in the world just to come in first. And he's disgraced and disadvantaged all the other fair participants in that. Drive number three is to take the best for yourself and the heck with everybody else. And you can see this in politics, where the thought of somebody having an opportunity to vote, no, not going to let people to vote. No, we're not going to let people have a fair opportunity. No, we're not going to let people do this. We'll vote for a pay raise for ourselves and not for anybody else. And this action, this behavior is so prevalent that it's amazing that nobody really understands it. It is the ego that is in control of the people making decisions to do stuff like this. And the fourth ego drive is to keep the best for self. All the possessions that we've acquired, keep them for ourselves. Money, status, fame, power, influence, friends, family. Keep all these possessions for ourselves and the heck with everybody else. The NIMBY, not in my backyard, is like, no, I don't want those people in my neighborhood. No, I don't want that kind of house in my neighborhood. No, I don't want, I don't want them to have a pay raise from $7.75 an hour up to a billionaire's point of view. How crazy is that? How crazy is that? But when the ego is in control of these people and they're completely unaware of it, they're not really fully human beings. Now, if you think about another means that is being used to kill us, and we participate fully in this, is these factory-raised animals, cows and chickens and whatever, that are raised in terrible, terrible conditions. And when you eat that, because of all the antibiotics and the other chemicals and the abuse and the terror that these animals suffer, and when they're slaughtered, how is it we don't think that slaughtering an animal in terrible conditions that is experiencing terror and fear doesn't impact the meat that we're about to eat? I believe it has to. If we are eating the meat that's filled with terror, it goes into our bodies, it has to have an energetic impact on our own physiology, which might, on some hand, explain the illnesses that other people are being experiencing or having in life, the obesity, the other malfunctioning. It's like, I think you've got a quart too much terror in your body that you just ate thanks to those hamburgers and other things. Bad news, bad news. One of the things that we're exposed to that our parents and grandparents weren't exposed to, at least to this extent, are synthetics, GMOs, and chemicals. Think of the water that you drink. Now it's questionable the quality of that water, even bottled water. People are scratching their heads. Is this stuff really good for me? And coming out of the water faucet, it's like, oh, that smells. You can't really drink it in some places. I lived in Houston. You turn the water faucet on, and it smelled like swamp. I tend not to drink coffee that, or even water that comes directly out of the faucet here in Florida. Like, why? Man, I don't know these chemicals. You can smell the chlorine. You know, if you spilled it on yourself, it might bleach you. It's really, really strange. Our parents never were exposed to this. Go walk on your lawn and find out if those chemicals were in the lawn when your parents were children? And the answer is, no, they weren't. Of course they were not. Lower energy forms. People don't think in terms of negatives, of criticism and judgment and sarcasm and humiliation and violent impulses and deceit and devious double dealings and other things like that. But those things, those are energy flows. Those are patterns. They're like a negative wind blowing and hitting us, and they affect us. People used to think, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. I heard that as a child, and guess what? It's false. That's not true. Science now knows that a humiliated child's brain can actually be stunted by humiliation. Those words are brain stunting. They're soul destroying. Their identity destructive. They're big. If you look at the media, TV, 6 o'clock news, stuff you read, political advertising, it's horrific. It's horrific. It's nasty as people can be to one another. I had this experience recently that I was looking at the Hawaii Five-O episode. I liked the characters, but it seemed to me they delayed a lot, or they always had gruesome murders. And I got to evaluate what is being shown in this movie. So I made a spreadsheet of about 13 different things to include some of those negative lower forms that I just mentioned. Judgmentalist, criticism, denigration, sarcasm, violent impulses, deceit, and devious and double dealings, and so on. And I want to just make a chart and see how many occurrences of this, how many of those energy patterns are flying around when I watch this TV program. And it was, I believe, a February 27th, 2015 episode. I'm going, besides the 7 murders, 4 random shooting episodes, and jewelry theft and deceit related to that, and treachery, I counted 91 occurrences of negative energy being thrown between characters. And, of course, out the computer screen onto people like me who are watching the show. In all fairness, 2 segments of about 10 or 15 seconds in which nurturing was shown. One guy was pleasant to another guy, and one guy was pleasant to an older woman. So maybe 20, 30 seconds tops versus 91 toxic, polluting energy throws. That's bad news. Bad news. What also harms us, and we do this because we allow the shaping of our own mindsets to be negative when it comes to aging. Some people, and this is true, right, can't afford to live, so they have to die. Gotta die. Can't afford to live. Can't buy food. Can't pay rent. And you go, well, obviously some plans were not made earlier in that, or circumstances prevented them, education and opportunity or where they lived, so they can't afford to live. What currently happens for a lot of people is a sense of unwantedness. The family doesn't want me because, I require care. And so, not far from where we are, there's a senior citizen home, and a whole bunch of them, actually. And some people are just warehoused there. The kids and the parents had enough money, so now the parents, one or both of them, are put in these places, and the kids talk to them periodically or never, or visit periodically or never. And they're just there until they die. They feel unwanted, and that contributes to the shutting down of their flow of life force to them, in them, and through them. I've known people who have retired. When they retired from work, they feel as though they've lost their purpose and they're no longer useful. I'm useless. I've known people who work for 30 years and 10 days after retirement, having arrived at that conclusion on some level, they fall over dead. You know, wow, that's terrible. This idea about being useless is incorrect. It's just a viewpoint, and it's not true. There are plenty of opportunities to be useful right up till we take our last breath. And in our culture, let's just talk about a couple of other attitudes. We're trained, we idolize competition, but not cooperation. We want to fight to be the top dog that come in first, and we don't cooperate to build, to construct, to create. And then there's tremendous industrial pressure to adopt war as a strategy to solve problems rather than to create peace. And all the resources that go into war don't go into anything else. Don't go into schools. Don't go into highways. Don't go into taking care of seniors. Don't go into developing human potential. They go into destruction. And that's all adding up to killing us. I see magazines that come and go, and I'm looking at several that, oh, wow, here's a bulletin that I just saw about a modern healthcare patient safety and quality conference. There are a couple of key segments to this conference is full disclosure of medical errors, building a system of transparency and accountability. Right now, errors are covered up. That, and I've heard it, and maybe you have too. That person died of a complication of their condition. They came in with a sore throat. They came in with a hangnail, and all hell broke loose because somebody made a mistake. When you look at the number fourth killer in America, number four is the pharmaceutical medical hospital system that combines through errors, through complications, through contraindications, through reactions to drugs and medical mistakes, kills people. Number fourth killer in America. That's kind of scary. And then we're looking at implementing a culture of patient safety. You would think maybe day number one that you're creating an organization, patient safety would be a priority. But that's a little scary to me. And the latest safety frontier? Battling diagnostic errors. That's a biggie. That's how people die. My father died because of a diagnostic error. My younger sister almost lost a leg because of a diagnostic error. Another sister was having a cesarean section because she had a bad heart. Guess which anesthesiologist forgot to turn the anesthesia on, which, upon making an incision, my sister let the doctor know, he just sliced into her belly. You're going, how the hell is this stuff possible? It's possible. It's been going on for the longest period of time. And it's making progress. It's a good news that they're dealing with this stuff, but there's a long way to go. One of the magazines that I get is Modern Healthcare. And it's interesting to me, living in Florida, the nearest airport is in Fort Myers, and I've arrived there multiple times after trips. And it fascinates me that down at the bottom by the luggage, as people come down the escalators, there are drivers holding signs with the names of well-known drugs like Zoloft or Xanax or others on them. It's like, wow. They are waiting for physicians to come to Florida. The physicians qualified for these trips by writing a lot of prescriptions for those particular drugs. And they are now coming to Naples, Florida, or Fort Myers for... They're coming for conferences, or golf, or fishing or some other things. But in this most recent Modern Healthcare magazine, right on the cover, they have article about high prescribers. And inside, they show the names and the amount of money prescribed by certain doctors and the amount of money the manufacturer of that drug has paid those doctors. You write a lot of prescriptions, I'll give you money. Any conflict of interest there? Feel trusted and safe in the hands of those doctors? I sure don't. Recently, coming back on a trip, I needed something to read, or I wanted something new to read. I had a Kindle and an iPad, but all of a sudden I saw a Fortune magazine article with a headline about Alzheimer's, the race to a cure. And it showed a graphic that looks like the convolutions of a brain, but that artwork was actually money curled up. So the two lobes of the brain, if you look at it, are actually dollars. I read the article because I'm interested in this. I think the fear of Alzheimer's is a great topic to be able to heal with people. And I read the article. There was nothing about the patients in there, except in this regard. These pharmaceutical companies and the scientists that are racing to find a drug for Alzheimer's are drooling over this. They think they're on the cusp of developing a drug that they can market 10 years in advance of any known symptom of Alzheimer's. Their goal that they're looking at, this is the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, is to be able to prescribe a drug for every living being 10 years ahead of whatever age they select, just because of the fear of Alzheimer's. If every person is on the drugs, you know how much billions and billions and billions of dollars all these guys are about to make, and that's what they're about. And nothing in this article is about the patient. Nothing about the care. Nothing about the cure. Nothing about the cause. It's all about this treatment of, if we can write a prescription 10 years, you know how much money we can make? You know what the profit is going to be? That's what it's all about. That doesn't reassure me. And if we're going to get to live to be 120 and healthy, I don't think the medical profession or the pharmaceutical industry are the people that are going to help us do that. They may intercede if there's an emergency, and they're lifesavers in those cases. If you're going to have a appendicitis, or you're going to have a subdural hematoma and you're going to die from internal bleeding, I recommend you go see a doctor. But for ordinary stuff, you want to think that over. I sure do. Because these folks have a different agenda, in my opinion. I recently went to a dermatologist and I said, I have a couple of things I'd like you to look at. And they said, oh, those are seborrheic keratosis. Those are ordinary people your age, all the time, no cancer, no problem, no anything. And she handed me a brochure. And that was the end of the discussion of those things. So I'm looking at the brochure when I got home later in the day. And it said, we don't know what causes these things. More study is necessary. And I thought to myself, being somewhat cynical, I'm a New Yorker, You know what? They're not interested in studying this. This is a fountain of money. This is like the golden goose. Treatment of these things is where the money is. Not discovering what causes it, not preventing them, treating them. And it makes me think that no research has really been done on these things because they've been around for probably thousands upon thousands of years, and we don't know what causes them. Somebody's not paying attention. But I'm thinking the research involved in keratosis is not going to produce any kind of really great patentable solutions. Now, in cancer research, right, you look and say, well, they haven't found anything, but they're researching like crazy because they're trying to come up with treatments. They don't want to cure it, nor do they want to prevent it. They want to treat it because, like the Alzheimer's, that's where the money is. So if we're going to live to be 120 and healthy and then avoid death and suffering, is it possible? How are we going to do it? Well, depending on who you talk to, people say, medical technology, medical, you ought to know what they're doing out there. And they're doing amazing things. The only challenge is only a few are going to have access to it, not humanity wholesale, nor will most people be able to afford it. So if you can't get access to it, you can't afford it, you might as well not even know about it. So is science going to be to the rescue? Well, much like that Alzheimer's article in Fortune magazine, science is committed to profit in a lot of these cases, not to reduce human suffering. This is what I think of science. I had a physicist who was a client, and he said to me, Tom, you don't even know what gravity is. I don't. I thought it was the Earth pulls us toward it. He said, that's not it. It's not it. Gravity pushes us down. It doesn't pull us down. It's from the top down. I said, I didn't know that. So at a class reunion, I talked to a classmate's husband who was a physics professor at Tufts University in Massachusetts. I said, can I ask you a question about physics? Sure. I have a physicist friend who says gravity is not a force that pulls us down, but in fact a force that pushes us down. What do you have to say to that? He said, we're not really sure what gravity is. We're not sure what gravity is. There are a lot of different theories about it, but we're not sure. We don't even agree on what gravity is. Isn't that amazing? I'm thinking it's kind of shocking. When I think of science, I think back to when I lived in Manhattan, I would go to the Bronx on the subway with my golf clubs and play at the golf course there, oldest public course in America, by the way, Van Cortlandt. And I hooked up with a guy there. He was a single, and we ended up playing together and became friends. He was a medical doctor, an anesthesiologist. So I said, Lester, what do you do? He said, I'm an anesthesiologist, but I hate the operating room, so I'm an expert witness. What is that? What does an expert witness do? He said, I work for a drug company, and when people sue us for some birth defect or some other horrible thing, I go on the stand and say, we didn't do it. It's not our fault. Is it your fault? I hate being in the operating room, and somebody has to do this job, and I need work, and that's what I do. Big pharma and medicine, when you start looking at the side effects on every drug that you hear advertised, every day, seems an amazing barrage of this kind of advertising. Listen to the small print. When your arms and legs fall off and your head explodes and you all this stuff, you crap yourself and you faint and you ask your doctor if this is right for you. Well, after you went through that whole list of side effects, which are just effects, we call them side effects because then we don't really want them, but they're just effects. Why would my doctor give this to me? And why would I ask my doctor if this is right for me? This is where we have to start thinking for ourselves, or that live to be anything and healthy is getting slimmer and slimmer. There are some emerging technologies, and Google is a sponsor of some of this technology because they are trying to improve the world, and I admire that. And some of this stuff is amazing. They're working on artificial intelligence that can make arms and legs, prosthetic arms and legs work, and control operating instruments and so on. Understanding the brain. The brain is relatively new as a subject. Maybe not so new, but certainly progress is relatively new. The last 20 years or so, We go like, oh, we actually do grow new brain cells. We didn't know that. No kidding. Big problem because of the way animals are fed in these farm factories is that they get pumped full of antibiotics, and we're creating a whole world filled with superbugs. And so the need now is, like, we got to have different antibiotics that kill stuff that we have created by our overuse of other antibiotics. There are genetic, there are searching for genetic cures for cancer and genetic repair technologies to be able to look at somebody and go, that child is going to be deformed. We should go in and repair some of their DNA. Like, yikes, there are moral issues there. But all of this stuff is on the table, and it's coming into fruition. It's going to be real. One of the areas interesting to me that you'd think it's kind of common sense is understanding the microbiome, this area of our intestinal tracts. This center portion of our body is filled with unbelievable amounts of life. In fact, 90% of the DNA that exists within this container called our bodies is not even us. It's all the stuff in our microbiome. And when that is out of balance, why? Because of the drugs we've taken, because of the antibiotics that has wiped this place out. It's kind of like bombing a city and then wondering why the city doesn't work. And all of this stuff, now we're recognizing, gee, this is resulting in autoimmune diseases, brain problems, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, all kinds of stuff are resulting once we destroy this internal universe that we have that's, in theory, working for us. They're even generating organs. How about 3D printing of skin? Now, if any of us were burn victims, that would be a really convenient thing. I would like some skin that doesn't come from my body or somebody else. And so they're in the process of being able to do that, creating stem cells at will that will repair body parts. All of this stuff is coming. It's in some stages of development, but it's coming. Having access is a whole different ballgame. Being able to afford it is a whole different ballgame. One of the challenges that we have on the way to 120 and healthy is people make judgments about us because of our age. And one of the challenges is, of course, marketing companies and people who stand to make a lot of money, other than scam artists, the elders are great targets for that. So they're easy pickings in a lot of cases. And so all these predators are searching for the older people. But people who are selling junk and selling a lot of other stuff based upon our consumption-based economy don't have any use for us, simply because we're wiser, we bought it all, we already have enough, we recognize that's not really the way to happiness. This stuff is, in a lot of cases, unnecessary or just plain junk. So nobody's really interested in us. And they make judgments about us. You know, too old, too annoying, too this, too that. And so really what we got to get to the point of is, human being, treat me, not my age. And there's a book by Mark Lacks, L-A-C-H-S, a medical doctor, that talks about this, how a person can get the best medical care or get the best medical care for a loved one, because otherwise they're going to get the short end of the stick. So when it comes down to live to be 120 and healthy, and frankly, you don't have to be 120. Choose any number you want. It doesn't make any difference. It could be 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100, 110, 120, 130. Whatever number you take, though, understand that thriving is the goal. Thriving is the goal. And being healthy is essential to thriving. When you look at it, this is kind of an equalizer. Money is not going to be the difference maker for people making it to 120 and healthy. Some years back when I was in Havana, Cuba, in the Hotel Nacional, they had a poster with the pictures and the occupations of the oldest people in Cuba. And everybody was either an ordinary worker or a farmer or a housekeeper or some other level like that. They were just people who had expectations under control, and they were grounded and connected to the earth in most places. It wasn't about money. They didn't get to be their ages over 100 because they had money. I believe they had consciousness. Consciousness is the different maker. That's the difference maker. It's how we think. The bonding we do and the rejecting we do and the bonding we don't do, greed and gluttony, and the rejecting that we don't do, hating and killing, and understanding the law of cause and effect. We're going to get what we give. We're going to reap what we sow. We're going to plant seeds through our thinking, speaking, feeling, acting, and we're going to reap that harvest. And so if we're planting harmony, seeds of harmony, guess what? Harvesting that is going to help us thrive. And if we can come to terms with this idea of the human ego and become its masters instead of being mastered by it, and recognize that ultimately, much like Christ said, love is the answer. Love, love, kindness, embracing people. That's the answer. So how do you do this? What do you do to continue living? I say, make up your own rules. Think for yourself. Decide on what's most important. You make the rules, because if you don't, other people are going to have you obey and operate by their rules. But you don't need to be a rocket scientist to know that rules are oftentimes made by people who don't obey them. They use them for control of other people. See the movie Cider House Rules, C-I-D-E-R, Cider House Rules, and you'll get the point. And if we continue to live, we continue to grow. You can be easily 90 years old and you can still work out and build muscle mass. That's a very common thing nowadays. And 90-year-olds can change their beliefs, change all of their experiences, and still find happiness despite years and years of unhappiness. And learning never has to end. If you think about learning is equal to growing, growing spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically, you go, growing, growing, growing. If we're not growing, we're either dying or we already died. Not that good. And if we look for opportunities to nurture and nourish not only ourselves and family members, but other people, nurture and nourish. Plant those seeds, and then we'll be nurtured and nourished. How's that? That's a good idea. And heal. We're going to do it automatically unless we interfere with it, but we can help people heal. And that's a wonderful, wonderful goal. And protecting other people, supporting them, standing up for them, helping them be safe is a perfect way to be safe. We want to fulfill our needs, and we want other people to have their needs fulfilled, at least in theory. You know, if you believe there's enough good for everybody, if you buy into scarcity, then of course you've got a different point of view about that. You need to take yours and the hell with everybody else. But that person is never going to live to be 120 and healthy, and probably not healthy, because that is an unworkable strategy. Fulfillment of need, if you can allow it, if you can allow it, and our extravagant needs of a consumer society can be reduced down to realistic levels too. But the idea of work, we want to be useful. And people say, well, I'm retired, I don't want to work, I want a hobby. Well, you know what? A hobby is work, except we labeled it differently because we enjoy it. So it's a whole different experience. I suggest this, that since we're all going to die, get used to it. But importantly, don't take your wisdom with you. Capture your wisdom. Write it down. Record it. Tell somebody else. Document it. Make it in physical form so after we die, that legacy still exists. It can benefit other people, family members, society. We capture this wisdom. If we would use it, that would be fantastic. One of the challenges is when an older person feels unwanted, they think they're without value, they're without usefulness. And the thing is, now they finally know something. They're like an encyclopedia, and we discard them. Soon as they know a lot of valuable stuff that could help us, we discard them. How crazy of a society is that? So capture your wisdom and leave it as your legacy. It'll help the survival and understanding rhythm, which older people will. We know night and day and seasonality, and we know something other than instant gratification. Younger people have yet to learn that in a lot of cases. And if we can appreciate the law of cause and effect, we're going to know it feels better to be loving than it does to be other ways, like inconsiderate or cruel or unkind or disrespectful. That'll help us live, because those are the seeds that we're going to sow, and we're going to eat that harvest. This idea of living to be 120 and healthy, in my opinion, it's a choice. How long we live and under which conditions we live and how we die, I believe, is a choice. Decide. Let me mention this logo. I've had people say to me, you know, logos with green in it, crazy. That's not how you do it. It needs to be bold colors and this and that and blues and reds and black and dynamic. And you never use gray. You never use gray. I say, let me explain my logo to you. First of all, if you're the type of person who thinks in black and white, either or, binary, good or bad, you leave out the gray. You're going to create rigidity in yourself. You're going to be inflexible, and you're going to shorten your life. There is a lot of gray in life, and if we recognize it's all not cut and dry, it's all not black and white, we're going to be much more open to alternative points of view in the people that we deal with. And that means we're going to be more embracing of them. Oh, that's a new point of view. Never thought of that before. Let me consider that. Black and white, we'd dismiss it immediately. We would reject it right out of the chute as soon as we hear it. Nope. Or maybe we would even reject it beforehand because they're not the same color as we are. Different accent, different language, different look, different customs. We don't. There's only one. It's ours. And if we see things black and white, we're at a disadvantage. And we need to embrace. And the green, if we're doing things in our lives that are not sustainable, sustainable for the planet, for our work, for our families, for our bodies, and if we're not doing things sustainable for the internal environment that I mentioned before, the microbiome, we're going to be killing ourselves. So if we embrace the gray and embrace others and do things that are sustainable, we're going to be so much better off and increase the likelihood that we can live to be some ripe old age and healthy, be it 120, more or less. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from letter 8 in Christ Returns, Reveal Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, You are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask You to reveal the true reality of Yourself to us. We know it is Your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of Your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that You protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express You. As we speak to You, we know that You are perfectly receptive of us, for You are universal, loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that it was as we ask You to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into Your divine consciousness. And as we listen, You will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into Your care. Thank You. It is so. Amen.